Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome back to the NSFW podcast. Here is the usual three, pretty much.
Hello, I'm back. I was away for a week. I know you missed me.
Sav, Dave and Joe.
He was away for
you.
A week?
Yeah. Where was I?
Yeah, because I hosted the last one we did.
Oh, yeah, it was me, you, and the myth. Where were you?
Maybe I was just like had a day off or something. What day did you shoot?
I mean, this is wicked. Yeah. For everyone listening, this is great stuff.
Sorry.
But me, Sav and Joe all sitting here. And the reason I'm presenting to you today, because obviously it's usually Joe, but we had a very good response to our last podcast where we, quote, got to know the myth.
Mm-hmm.
And we had quite a few people asking that they'd quite like to just see sort of a running couple of episodes where we get to know members of the Balls Up of the Nation. Get to know members of the Nation. So, we're starting with Joe.
Hello!
The big dog.
Back in the building, trying to bring some energy because we're shooting this at 2:17 on a Saturday night. That's 2:17 a.m.
Yeah.
On Sunday
ahead of
morning.
The Wilder versus Fury fight, which we don't know the result of yet because we're going in to film that in a minute. But yeah, I'm trying to bring some energy because Horner looks like he's slumping. Sav
I'm
looks like
calm.
He's slumping.
No. I'm good. I'm blessed.
Sav is actually all right. I am struggling big time.
Yeah, you are
so
a little bit.
So pressure is on you here because we're about to get to know you.
Let's
do it. And it's going to be awkward if I fall asleep. Yeah. So you better have some riveting stories.
I'll try my best.
I think we'll come on to... We've asked people for sending questions on Instagram and all that, but I think we'll come on to that in a minute. I think you should probably just give us...
Give us a little beef.
A little bit of background on who is Joe? Like, where are you from?
Yeah, who are you?
Hi, guys. My name's Joe Tomlinson, and I come from Exeter in Devon.
Which is where in the UK, for those that aren't?
It's right down in the southwest of England.
Is.
Right in the corner. It's absolute to get to from anywhere else in the country. It takes about 4 hours from London. It takes a lot longer from anywhere else. If you go any further south, down into Cornwall, my boy, then you get down to 6-7 hours travel. You go halfway across Europe for that, but the trains in the southwest of England ain't good.
Can we do the rest of the podcast?
What, in my Devonshire accent?
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
So all of my friends speaking like full Devonshire.
Is it really?
Accent. Yeah. Oh, yeah, proper. Especially like tradesmen. Any tradesmen down Devon, you don't get a word out of them. Well, I'm like, there's my boy. Yeah, I don't understand what they say. £120.
How long have I known you now? 4 years?
Maybe three, four years, yeah.
Yeah, probably about that. You have become a lot more London in your accent the time I've known you.
Everybody said that. When I first left... for university, aged 18, I was probably a bit more like this sort of level. Maybe not quite like that much, but had the twang.
I've heard his interview, you know, the Solent thing that you do. Your accent in that compared to like now, completely different.
That's the video I noticed it in.
Because obviously
day to day, you're not going to clock it.
But
when we saw that clip,
looking back,
I fall in line with the Queen's tone for broadcast, darling. Nobody likes a Devonshire boy on screen. Just don't run with anyone else.
Well, let's carry on doing it then.
I grew up in Exeter. Went to one school. Well, I went to a primary school. I grew up in a little place called Topsham, which is picturesque. Absolutely beautiful, but tiny. It's a little town. Exeter is kind of a big city, one of the bigger cities in Devon and in the southwest, but it's not big. For Exeter, for like Devon, it's a big city, but if you actually put it into context in comparison to like a London or a Newcastle or a Manchester, for anyone listening at home that doesn't know England very well, it's tiny. So I'm quite a Devonshire boy. It's quite a countryside town. Lots of farms. It's by the sea.
Can I ask you a question?
Lots of farming going on. Go on.
Your name's Tomlinson, right?
Yeah.
Where does your name originate from? Because it sounds Scandinavian. So what's your background?
What?
Well, as in Tomlinson, when you hear son at the end of somebody's name, it usually connotes Scandinavian heritage.
I think Swedish specifically.
No, I do have
Danish. Not all of them, because Norwegian isn't the same.
Well, even Iceland, they're all son.
I do have Scandinavian heritage, but I don't think on my dad's side. Now, my dad's side is the Tomlinson.
Your mum's side.
My mum's side. So my mum's maiden name is Schlafly.
Okay.
So I believe I'm like a quarter Swiss or an eighth Swiss.
Really?
Yeah. So that's where it comes from, I think. But Tomlinson, I don't think is particularly exotic. I think it is just an English name.
Right.
I'm not 100% on that. I've never done any research. But definitely my mum's side of the family is got a Swiss background. She travelled a lot when she was younger because she was... her dad was in the military, so grew up a lot in sort of like Singapore and out in Asia. And then obviously landed in England, met my father.
Handsome man that he is.
Handsome old Bob. And then I was spawned down in Royal Devon and Exeter before moving to Topsham, everybody. Topsham Primary School before finding my way to St. Peter's Church of England School, Exeter.
So you're one of how many kids?
I am... 101. Well, I've got two half sisters. Okay. So my dad was previously married.
Okay.
So I've got two half sisters. But when I was growing up, they lived with their mum predominantly.
Okay. Right.
So although they are my sisters, it's not like direct line sisters. Yeah, although I would like consider them my direct line sisters.
Yeah, of course.
So I've got two questions, Joe, off of what you were just saying. First one's a little bit going back to what you said before. Mm. I just want to know. You said obviously Topsham's a big city in your area.
No, Exeter's a city. Exeter's Topsham's a town.
Sorry, but so when you said that it would be small in comparison, did you think you were from around a fairly big city and then came to London, and how did that differ?
Well, for me, because my journey was Exeter via Southampton to London. So I went to university in Southampton. Okay, so it was kind of a nice stepping stone.
Yeah.
So Exeter, when you're there, you think it's quite big. But then as you're growing up, as I sort of got to 17, 18, you know, the sort of age where you start to go out, you know that it's not that big because I could walk into a club and know every single person in there.
Mm. Really? Every single person? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that's mad.
I can't understand that. Like, me and Sav will probably both be the same. Mm. Growing up, completely different ends of London, but growing up in London...
Well, you got to think...
It's like, you go to a club...
Yeah.
Mostly to meet people you don't know.
But you got to think, in Exeter, there's only, three clubs.
Wow.
So you've got to think it's a very different sort of thing.
That's so alien for me.
It gives you an idea of scale,
because each club has, like, a night of the week. So, like, you would go to Rococo's on Monday.
Yeah.
Well, it's now gone. It's no longer Rococo's. I don't know what it's called. It's called, like, Fever, I think. But anyway, what was Rococo's, which is where we used to go every Monday night when we're at college, only college people would be there. And I would know every single person from
Exeter. Yeah. See, now that makes a bit more sense, because having nights, when I was at uni in Bournemouth, that was what Bournemouth was like. Like, you could plan your week. There was no point going to a club on something that wasn't their night. It was just dead.
It would be dead.
So that's effectively sort of the size of Exeter. So you could walk down the high street, and say if I went back now, I could still walk down the high street and know probably 10 to 15 people if I was just walking down the high street.
So then when you came to London, what was the first I still haven't asked my second question, but what's the biggest shock for you when you came to London, like biggest change?
The cultural diversity.
Yeah,
that's the biggest shock. Down in Exeter, there is not an awful lot of cultural diversity. whereas in London, obviously one of the most multicultural cities on the planet, it's incredibly diverse. And you're meeting people from different backgrounds, from different countries, different religions, different ethnicities. Whereas in Exeter, it's super isolated. It feels super isolated, is what I would say. So it's almost exclusively sort of white English people. Whereas in London and Southampton as well, to be fair, it's much more ethnically and much more ethnically diverse.
So imagine he was the exotic one because he's a bit of Swiss.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't the exotic one. I was not the exotic one.
The thing is, I think London in general, and certain boroughs in particular in London, would be a shock to anybody. Like, if you go to Haringey, I think I read something the other day, Haringey is the most multicultural and culturally diverse borough in Europe. Yeah. So it's not just that London's a shock for people in this country. I think it'll be a shock for anybody from anywhere coming from somewhere that's a little bit more remote.
Mm. Yeah, well, I guess we'll come on to like my move up to London and stuff later, but like I moved straight to Brixton.
So it's
literally like going
polar opposite,
out of Exeter into Brixton. And you Brixton's could not get
also,
more chalk and cheese.
Brixton's also a strange... it's going for a strange time at the moment because you are the quintessential every person moving to
Part
Brixton.
Part of the gentrification of Brixton.
Yeah. So there's all of that moving in, but Brixton's never been that.
Yeah.
So it's a real clash at the moment.
But yeah, that's a little bit of sort of the taste of Exeter. It is quite, you've got to imagine it's quite an isolated, small city, but it's definitely one of the most popular cities in England.
It's
got one of the best universities in the country, in Exeter University, which is a sporting powerhouse of a university. It's sort of up on similar standing to Loughborough.
Yeah.
And you think people think immediately when you say sporting university in England, they think the best is Loughborough. That's where England rugby train. Mm-hmm. That's where England football train on occasion. That's where they have the prime rugby teams.
Yeah.
But Exeter takes them on head-to-head every single year in pretty much every sport, other than maybe football.
I went to Loughborough when I was working in my old job to interview Zoe Smith, who's a weightlifter for Team GB at the Commonwealth.
Facilities are crazy.
It's unbelievable. It doesn't even look like a uni.
Anyone you talk to who says they went to Loughborough, it's a sports degree.
Yeah,
it's always going to be a sports degree.
Yeah, you know. But I think sport in Exeter is a big thing. So when I was in when I first went to high school, which for non-English people is 12, is it? 11, 12?
11.
When you go to secondary school, whatever. Yeah. Secondary school, high school.
Do you call it high school?
I called it high school, yeah.
Wow.
Serious?
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe I think I called it high school. At the time, I probably called it secondary school. Now I've watched and been Americanized, I call it high school, maybe.
That's weird.
But when I went to secondary school, St. Peter's, which is where I went, it's like a massive focus on sport. Like we had amazing football teams, rugby teams, cricket teams. And I feel like Exeter as a whole is quite a sporting city. Obviously, Exeter Chiefs, for people who don't know, rugby. When I was in school, we were a championship side, like barely even a professional team. And then over the last 5 years, they've gone from being, or for 6 years now, have gone from being a championship side with a terrible pitch, playing almost amateur, all the way up to the champions of England, 3 finals in 3 years,
top
of the league again. So it's like a real sporting city that's quite small.
You played cricket, football, and rugby though, didn't you? Like growing up.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I was
across bare sports,
I was really good at sport, but I was a super late developer. Like I went through puberty at like 15. So you gotta understand is that I was small. I was probably like 5'2", hadn't gone through puberty, and I was playing with boys that were big, strong, and physical. But I was naturally very good at sport. So cricket, I was playing county level. Rugby, I was trialing for county level. Football, I was at academy level for all of the sports. But at that age, hormones play a huge part. So at football, I remember being scouted by Exeter City. I was playing as a central defender for like my local club and my school, and then they basically put you forward and you go, and I had like a 3 month trial or a month trial for Exeter City, the academy, which is a pretty good standard. Obviously, I think they were League One or League Two back then. And I was trialing out a centre back, but me physically compared to other boys, I was so far off it. And at that age,
it's key,
you're getting run over. Getting run over. Like the physicality is so strong. And then at cricket, I was quite diverse at cricket. I was playing wicketkeeper. I could bowl occasional off spin, bowl medium pace, and I could bat a bit. So I was doing pretty well playing for sort of East Devon boys. which was a decent level. And then at school, I only played school rugby. I did go to a couple clubs for trials, but I played school rugby. And we were like winning Devon Cups, Southwestern Schoolboys Cups and stuff like that. We had a really good team. And I didn't start playing rugby until secondary school when I was probably like 13, 14. And I came straight in as scrum half because I was just naturally small, gobby, really gobby, and like quite hyperactive as a child. So I was perfect for scrum half. And I just used to love to tackle everything. Everything that could move, I would tackle. I remember being a foot shorter than boys and just trying to whack them as hard as I could and pick them up, dump them out of touch. And I remember rugby teachers come up to me and going, "What the hell are you doing? You're going to injure yourself. Like, calm yourself down." Getting kicked in the face. I used to just love the physicality, even though I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But I was technically really sound at all sports. Like, I can throw the... Still to this day, I can throw the ball so far.
He can.
He has got a good throw on him, but the way you talk up your throwing is you absolutely love it.
I will take anybody on that throw, seriously.
Last sports day.
It's just great when you're in a full-time job working in an office and you've still got someone walking around going, "I can throw further than you."
Yeah, it's true. I will throw further than anybody in this office, though, and everybody knows it. But yeah, I was really good at sport growing up, and then kind of...
What was you about to say?
No, that's right, go on.
Go on, and then kind of... When I went through like puberty like quite late, I guess by that time physicality had kind of not knocked my confidence, but I wasn't as good as other physical boys. Mm-hmm. And although I was probably technically as good, they'd surpassed me so far physically. I felt like this, I can't catch them up. I may as well just bin it off. So I binned off rugby, binned off football. I kept going with cricket because cricket's a kind of game where you don't need physical attributes. Yeah. I could ruin... I remember being 15 and being able to ruin men on the cricket field with my mouth.
Within half
an hour, I could completely ruin a guy. I remember being like 14 playing men's first team cricket and having like 40-year-olds turn around to me and be like, "Would you f*** off, you stupid Harry?" And I would just stand there smiling. And as a wicketkeeper, I could just ruin them. Yeah. Like, have them to the point of...
What's the word
trying
for it?
To whack, snapping.
There's a word for it where you're chipping away at somebody.
Yeah, I don't know.
But there was the thing that they called it.
That's the thing. I can't remember what they called it.
What was it they called it?
They say Ricky Ponting was wicked at it. He just used to ruin people.
There was
sledging. Yeah.
I mean, I was a specialist at sledging. Like, a specialist. To the point where I'd have grown men try and whack me or have them, like, breaking down, laughing in tears when the bowler's running in. Like, I don't know. It's always been a skill of mine to get
an
emotion
skin.
Out of someone or under people's
Again,
skin.
Again, doesn't surprise
I
me
I can
all.
Get under people's skin really, really good. And as a wicketkeeper, specialist at it. And so I kind of binned rugby and football because I didn't have the confidence, but boys had just surpassed me as cricket. I could enjoy it, didn't have to be physical, and I knew my mouth and my technical ability, I was going to be okay. So, like, sport got me through... Sport is the best. If you're good at sport, everybody likes you. That's what happens.
It's true, man. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I remember having a nickname and being good at sport and being like, "Yes, I'm winning at school."
And what was the nickname?
Cheesy.
Because of the hair.
Cheesy, what's it?
I remember being like year seven. I hadn't had a nickname up to before I first came to school, to high school. And then I got Cheesy. I think one of my friends, Josh Bolton, gave it to me. And he was just like, "Yeah, right, Cheesy." And then from that day, I wasn't called Joe until I was 18.
Really?
By a single person. My teachers, by, like...
Teachers by, calling you Cheesy?
Yeah. By my teachers, by my rugby tutors, by my football coaches, by my friends...
My mum and dad.
By my friends' parents, by my friends. Like, everybody would just be like, "Cheesy, Cheese, Chez," like, anything like that.
Like,
no Joe. Joe, that's if crazy. Somebody said Joe, I'd be like, "I'm in trouble."
Yeah.
Or it's Joseph, crazy. I'm in trouble.
I
remember you saying that you based your cricket style around, what was that bloke from up north, like northeast?
Paul Collingwood.
That fella.
Paul Collingwood, yeah. And Paul Collingwood, my fielding ability on Paul Collingwood, because I was an exceptional fielder.
Great player, wasn't
But
he?
My gobbiness, more on Gillespie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Australian wicketkeeper.
Yeah, madness.
The other question I had, because you were sort of mentioning around it, but we've just mentioned them, so it's fine. But tell us a bit about your mum and dad in terms of their their works, their jobs and things like that. Because they've got, your mum and dad have got pretty cool careers, haven't they?
I mean, yeah, definitely. So my mum is a teacher. She's taught at a number of different places, everything from sort of special education, and now she teaches the Marines.
What does she teach?
She teaches English and maths.
Okay.
But to become a Marine, you've got to have a certain level of English and maths. And people don't know, living outside the UK, the Marines are like basically like the elite version of the army.
Yeah.
What would the equivalent be? Not SAS. Like if you were talking about the Americans.
Maybe SEALs, isn't it?
No. So the SEALs is more like the SAS, right, I think. Maybe it's not. It's basically, yeah, it's basically like the Navy SEALs, I guess. It's like the boat service.
Yeah. Yeah.
So probably is the Navy SEALs. Right. I think you're probably right. So my mum teaches them English and maths because Limpston is by Exeter, which is the home of the Marines, basically, down in the south. And they get awful beastings and stuff running up and down the mud and being made to lie in the mud and all that kind of stuff. So she does that. And then my dad is a crime scene investigator, so CSI, so the head of CSI. He's retired now. He was the head of CSI down in Devon and Cornwall. So growing up, I kind of had those two who, they're quite out there. So my dad is obviously seen a lot of things and has some unbelievable stories. And about, I used to sit and tell them for hours with like me and my friends about all the sort of dead bodies he'd seen or like crimes he'd investigated and stuff. And then my mum would have all sort of like her travel experiences and the things she was teaching. And she was always quite into her music and stuff. Used to go to a lot of Queen concerts and stuff like that. And so her side of the family was always quite alternative. I would say kind of bohemian almost, in terms of like they used to like a lot of music and partying and stuff like that, traveled around a lot. And my dad's side was more sort of military. His brother was SAS, or SBS, which is like the boat equivalent. And then would become a personal bodyguard to the royal family. And then his dad was set up the first firearms unit in London. And then he is CSI. And then his mum was a nurse. So it's like that's more that sort of exactly than me.
YouTube videos.
And then I make YouTube videos. And then my mum is. So I guess it's like those are the two like culminations of things. And then like growing up, my mum and dad would come to every sporting event. Like I'll be going to Millfield, which is like one of the primo rugby schools in the UK. It's produced some amazing players. And like I'd be there. 2 hour trip or whatever, 3 hour trip, and suddenly mum and dad would just turn up in dad's CSI van, crime scene investigation on the side. Tomlinson's are here. No other parents are here. Tomlinson's are here. He's there berating me on the touchline. Pick yourself up. Because yeah, just didn't really take fools very gladly, especially in sport. I remember he would just be screaming from the touchline at the umpires. Who's that over there? The opposition, at me, at all of my friends. Everybody going, you shut your dad up.
Would you say you take more after your dad than your mum, characteristically, or a mixture of both?
I'd say a mixture of both. Like my dad's, I definitely take my dad's vomiting ability on nights out.
Fantastic.
Physical energy.
Exactly. Our physical energy is very similar in terms of we're very crazy. So like my dad, some of the stories he'll tell is stuff like I remember him saying, so he had recently had a commendation ceremony where he was given like a lifetime achievement award from the police.
Shout out.
I remember, and I remember him saying that when he was like going through, I think he was working in London, maybe with the Met, or he was down in Devon and Cornwall. Anyway, he had a new boss and he didn't know who it was. And it was like a big party or something like that. And some of his colleagues brought this woman over, and my dad obviously had a few beers, didn't twig that this was his new boss, and went straight up to her and went back, grabbed her head, turned it to the side and stuck his tongue straight in her ear.
Oh,
and then she went, "Hey!" And then ran off, jumped on a table, whatever. And the next day, everybody's like, "What were you thinking? That is a new boss. You have to work with her every single day." That's that sort of energy that you can imagine him bringing. But then equally, like my mum is very similar, sort of that sort of. If you like, every single time they come up, they go, "Can we go Ministry of Sound?" It's like that sort of energy you've got to imagine. That it's kind of more like, let's go and see something. Because I think my mum growing up as well had, her dad was in the military, obviously, so very disciplined as well. But her mum was a nurse, very disciplined.
Mm.
So, not that they rebelled, I guess, but those that my mum, her, and her like siblings are all quite edgy.
Yeah, edgy.
Because obviously you've got like, I've told you about like John on the podcast before.
Is that, I thought that was your dad's brother. No, that's your mum's brother. Okay, right, cool.
So my dad's brother is was in the SAS, and then my dad's sister was a nurse, I think.
Right.
Something like that, yeah. So it's that sort of thing. There's a lot of sort of civil servants and military and nurses around my family.
Did you ever think of going into the military?
Growing up, yeah, probably. I always thought like if I did at school, I'll just go into the military. That was not my. I was always smart though.
You saw it as like a backup.
Yeah, I guess so. But I was like, I was always a smart kid.
Yeah.
But sometimes I had a real tendency for a lack of concentration, like distraction. I would be, every single report would be easily distracted, loves to distract others. I'd be stood at the front of a maths class on a table, like telling us, making up a story.
Yeah.
Or like the teacher would be like, oh, cheesy, we got 10 minutes left. Do you want to jump on the table and make up a story again? And I'd be like, I'd just make up an ad lib story for the whole class. It'd be that sort of thing. It'd be like a bit stupid. But then you'd write in my report card, easily distract numbers. So they stop putting me on the table then, mate. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, or I would make someone laugh for the whole lesson until they got thrown out. That was one thing I always used to try and do. Would be, I'd sit in like history and I would just focus. I'd be like, I'm getting him thrown out today. And I would just focus and zone on him until he got kicked out and then put in detention. And I could do it easy with pretty much everybody. So that was like my best skill set, was like being able to make people laugh and annoy them. So it kind of did. I always thought like if I completely fucked it at some stage of my life, I'll just go into the military because I'll be all right with that. But then asthma, probably wouldn't be. They'd probably get off, mate. No chance.
I did know you had asthma. I remember you saying that you wouldn't be able to play football because you didn't have your asthma pump with you.
Yeah. So. I had an asthma attack at the bloody five-a-side against Sky the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's all mad.
I know.
I think that's a nice little sort of intro.
But that was my Exeter. That was kind of Exeter.
Yeah.
I hope I've summed it up.
You did very well.
Yeah. I've just got to get that. By the way, we'll say this. We had a comment on the last one of these we did with the myth.
Yeah.
Where someone said, Horner's obviously bored because he's looking at his phone. I'm getting questions up. I'm not.
Yeah, we asked you guys to submit some questions on Instagram. If you don't follow Balls Up on Instagram, it's Balls Up UK. So go and.
Yeah, man.
So go and submit some stuff. Follow us and then submit some stuff. Get involved.
Also, let us know who you want to see doing this next.
Mm.
Here's a good question to start with from Marcus, actually. He says, we've sort of touched it because it goes off what we've been talking about, but he says, favourite story from high school?
Oh my god!
I'm assuming there's tons,
a lot.
Yeah, what's like one that springs to mind?
Most of them are sporting like involvements, and most of them come from like collisions. I seem to remember. I think I've told quite a few of them on this podcast, or like at least in and around it, involving some of my friends.
Shout out Ben King.
Where we would like play 50-50 games or target people on the AstroTurf. Excuse me. But I guess rugby, I remember we had a player in the rugby team, a prop. He's a big boy. Big boy. He was coming from a farming background. He's called Ben Boggis.
Boggis.
Ben Boggis. Big boy he was. Like not like necessarily tall, but as wide as you've ever seen at that age, sort of 13. Yeah. He went through puberty at age 4. Yeah. He's that sort of bloke. He'd just like step up and you knew he'd get involved. People would just whack him all the time, just punch him. And he'd just go, oh, yeah, thanks, Dad, for jokes. Thanks, I'm Ben. And I think he went on to become a landscape gardener. But I remember playing rugby with Ben at St. Peter's. And I remember distinctly us being at a scrum, and I was a scrum half, and I always used to smack Ben on the back of the head before we go into the scrum. I'd smack him over the back of the head and G him up a bit, rolling the ball and the scrum collapsing, and him coming up and his arm just hanging by his side.
Wow.
Like this. And I remember thinking, oh, doesn't look too healthy, Ben. He scrums again, goes in, he plays the next like 40, 50 minutes. He comes off, he goes, looks at me, goes, Joe, I hurt my arm. I went, what have you done, Ben? What have you done? And he gets an x-ray the next day. splintered his collarbone the whole way down. Ooh. He played 50 minutes of a game the whole way, just sheared it off. I remember going into our PE teacher, Mr. Caffrey, was called, and going, "Caffrey, have you heard about Boggis?" And he was going, "What are you talking about? I know he picked up a knock, didn't he? I went, he shattered his collarbone." And Caffrey going, "Oh." We had the school's final about 2 weeks later. It was a disaster. But I remember Ben Boggis really distinctly. He was such a nice bloke. You know, one of those like sort of lovely blokes who could just do no wrong. Yeah. Just a big friendly giant. I don't know. I'd love to know what Ben Boggis is doing. So if anybody knows of Ben Boggis, please let me get in touch with him because he was an absolute icon at school.
Absolute icon.
But most of them are injuries, aren't they, at school, I guess? Most of them just like broken
people
legs,
doing something
broken
stupid.
Bones. I remember one group of us throwing this kid called Ollie Adams in the air. You know, it's like, wait. We went 5, 4, and we just scattered, threw him, scattered, broke his arm so bad. Like, threw him. As high as I've ever seen a person getting flung. Like, think Pep Guardiola at Champions League final.
Yeah. Whack. And just everyone walked
away.
Just
scattered, broke his arm. Everybody just went, everybody saw the bone out. And everybody just went,
pre-planned? Yeah. Or did everyone was on a level?
I think there was a kind of pre-planning element to it. And we went, fuck that, ran off. I just remember just lying in the middle of the AstroTurf, just arm just shattered to pieces.
Dear. Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We've got a question in from Charlie who says he's thinking about doing sports journalism at uni. He thinks you did it, which you did, didn't you?
I did do sports journalism.
And he just wants to know, how did it go for you and would you recommend it?
Would I recommend it? It's a difficult one. It's a difficult one because I would definitely recommend university. That's what I would firstly say. University is the making of most people. And I'm sure, I know you didn't go, Seth, but I'm sure you would say it probably made you as well, Horner, to a level. I think getting out of a small city like Exeter and experiencing a slightly bigger one definitely changed me as a person. I loved lots of things about university. I loved the nights out. Because when you first go away, you think, oh yeah, I'm a bit of a boot. Like, you think, oh, I've been on a fair few nights out with the boys. Like, I think I'm a bit of a boot. And then you hit university and you're just like, I haven't had nothing compared to this. Like, fresh as you going out 20 days in a row. And I remember thinking, wow, this is going to be an experience. And it does turn into an experience. Living away from your parents, like having to cook for yourself, clean all your own stuff, having no real financial, like, support. Well, you've got financial support in terms of student loans, and you know your family are always there to help you out, but you've still got to budget yourself and look after yourself, get yourself to class on time. Nobody's driving you there. You're either driving yourself or you're getting public transport. That is definitely like a huge stepping stone. So I would recommend university, and I loved Southampton. It's a university city. Everybody goes out nearly every night of the week. It's like got a big long strip of clubs where everybody goes. It's two universities in the city, one posh, full of main Southampton University.
I was going to say, Solent's the less so.
Solent is the football studies and creative photography and sports journalism. And then one is like physics, maths, engineering. And you can definitely tell which is which on a night out.
Yeah.
But anyway, I would recommend it. I don't know whether I'd recommend sports journalism.
Why?
The reason is that the course is too old school. Right. And I believe this will be the case at every university in the country. I think that every university in the country makes the error of journalism being broadcast, paper, and radio. And a lot of courses, they still do print courses in journalism. They actually still have people doing print courses in journalism.
Which I find proper odd, man.
Like, that is as much of a robbery of kids' funds as you'll ever see. Print journalism is dead. And if it's not dead, it's dying.
Yeah, yeah.
And sure, there are transferable skills to the digital industry, but how many of those print journalists, those 50 to 80 year old print journalists that have been doing the local beat and moved up to a national beat around the years, have been able to adapt to the online space? 10% at best. And it's those people that haven't been able to adapt that are giving you the lectures. The people that are lecturing you are all ex reporter, ex News of the World, ex The Sun. And that is a massive negative. And on my course, the lecturers, don't get me wrong, were fantastic. Some of them were brilliant at their job and had brilliant experience and taught me so much. But journalism is changing so fast, and the media is changing even quicker. And I feel like universities around the country that are teaching journalism don't want to teach the new ways.
Do you think that you would have acquired the skills you use today for your job if you hadn't gone to uni? Do you think that you would have been able to do what you're doing now without the experience you had then?
Yeah. Yeah, I probably could. I mean, I could right before I even went to university, after high school, I went to college, Exeter College, and did journalism there. And I remember winning like an NCTJ Star of the Futures. That's the National College for the Training of Journalism Star of the Future Award for like a written piece I'd done. And I took it all to university and I developed my writing and stuff. But who reads articles anymore? There are people out there that do. But really, who's sitting down and reading a 1,000-word article? I haven't done it in ages, except for when I'm researching for a football podcast or trying to read an in-depth news article. I'll go and watch something, or I'll get it all summed up in a Twitter thread or an Instagram post. Like, I'm not going and consuming 3,000 words on the state of Brexit. I'm reading a thread on Twitter made up of 6 tweets from a respected outlet. That's what's happening now. And how do you teach someone to write a concise and clear and factual 6-thread tweet? You can't do it for $7,000 a year. Doesn't work. So if I was given advice, it'd be learn as many broadcast skills as you can, because they're definitely transferable. There's nothing that will ever change about camera skills, operating a camera with f-stops and ISOs and stuff. So teach yourself that. I found radio quite helpful. I know you did quite a lot of radio as well, didn't you?
My course was radio.
In terms of scripting for broadcast and understanding how to speak on camera and in mic. But in terms of actual journalistic skill, that's all natural. I think that's all inherited. The ability to chase down a story and being able to convey a story from start to finish clearly and concisely. The best person I can think of that does it, that I actually know personally, is Patrick Van Straten. People will not be able to see, if you don't know Pato, how well that guy can simplify the most complex thing down to a 5-paragraph structure or a tweet or a simple... Like, if you watch his video explainer on XG, on 1-on-1 on EFD, it's brilliant. How to, like, concisely explain an incredibly complicated thing into a 5-minute video. Is an incredibly hard skill, and you've either got it or you haven't. And he's got it. And I think, sure, you can be taught and trained how to do it, but you've either got it or you haven't.
I feel like it's the same with editing. You can't teach somebody to feel an edit.
Yeah,
you can teach them how to use the program.
Exactly.
But you can't teach them how to understand how to
put it together. Timings and flows and momentum.
Production's the same. When you have someone writing a script and then even just sitting down pitching you an idea, there's a feel. When you're like, I'm sure, I think we all do it, and it's quite weird because we all work in, like, me and you work in pretty much similar stuff, but you working mainly in edit, like, we work across different things. But I think we're three people who, when we're in front of camera, I'm thinking what the video looks like. Everything you say on camera, everything we do on camera, you're seeing it in the edit as you're doing it, and that's something I think which is natural,
because there's nothing wrong with certain university courses, and Solent's probably does it better than most in that it's extremely practical and hands-on, and they want you filming as much and recording as much and writing as much as you possibly can. But at the end of the day, the real successes and the real success stories out of nearly every university come from people that have done it off their own backs,
yeah,
that have gone out and hunted down a good story, or have gone out and made a vlog, or gone out and chased down some new knowledge. That is the real success stories. And I'm not saying that that doesn't come off the back of university, but I think universities need to start understanding the future is social. And at the moment, they don't know how to teach social. Yeah. How do you teach someone to write a good tweet, or to post a good photo on Instagram, or create a concise bit of metadata for YouTube? It's incredibly hard skills to teach. And the only people that really know those skills are young, talented individuals.
So I was just going to say, you're waiting for a generation to pass before they'll teach.
Exactly.
You, so they're not passing.
And that generation hasn't passed yet.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's only been over 10 years to 15 year time span, social media, the key figures in social media haven't really progressed into lecturing at a university, I guess. And the trouble is that social moves so fast that the first person 15 years ago that rocked it on MySpace...
Mm-hmm.
How can they lecture now? Because so, MySpace is dead. Mm.
So do you think 15, 20 years from now, you could lecture somebody?
No.
See, this is what I'm saying. So I don't think there can ever be.
A social media course. I completely agree. Because
you're
television,
the experts
certain
always,
skills always yeah, survive. Newscasting, certain skills always survive. Written word, you need to know how to convey who, what, why, where, when into the first three paragraphs. That is a skill that will always survive. But if nobody is reading that first three paragraphs, then that skill is obsolete. So the real skill for social media will be to teach the core principles of social media and how quickly it develops. That will be the real skill in 10 years' time.
That's
and I'm sure there will be people that are killing it. And there are people that already can convey in there's certain people who are doing TED talks on social media that are crushing it.
Mm-hmm.
So to completely write off and say we couldn't do a lecture or a university course on that, I think would be wrong. But whoever that lecturer is going to have a fucking hard time because it moves so quickly, this industry.
Well, mm-hmm, I think there's two things to that, which is, first of all, I think that you wouldn't teach social media. As you were saying, I agree with you that, you couldn't teach it as in what to do, but that isn't what the lecture would be. The lecture would be reading the industry. So it would be, you'd use the casing study of when one thing turned into another, how you adapted, and then you'd apply that learning further on.
But
so it's not word for word, it's interpretation. And I think the other thing is, when you say about someone having to pass to do it, While you were talking then, I was thinking that I actually, as it's come around, I actually do know a couple of people that lecture on the side of their jobs.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one way you will get it, is that people doing it literally live and in the flesh. But the interesting thing there is that your opinion can change day to day.
It really
can. So when you're trying to set correct answers on modules and stuff...
Yeah, it's a difficult. Difficult one, but journalism is always going to be that way. It's hard to come out with a correct A B answer to journalism. Mm. Is this story well written and well structured? Can often come down to an opinion. So I think that you should go to university. That would be my advice. If you want to go, be careful with the journalistic course you study on, because it has to be extremely practical. The more practical, the better. Steer well clear of print. And if you're going to specialise more in broadcast, because the skills are extremely transferable, than in any other factor. But just try and keep it open. I probably was extremely lucky. I wouldn't recommend doing sports journalism. It's too niche, man. Like, although it features transferable skills, it does pigeonhole you early doors. So if you're going to have to go into journalism, I would recommend going as broad as possible and broadcast. That would be my recommendation for people going to university, though, chasing that journalism.
I think that's actually a great answer to...
Not to on whoever went. I think that lad already said he'd already chosen to go sports journalism, but...
He was thinking about it, I think.
Just be careful, yeah.
Next question here from Asanka.
Asanka
asks, I think it's quite an interesting one. What's your biggest unpopular opinion?
Oh, wow.
I've got one potentially for you if you can't think of one. But
okay, let me hear your one first and I might be able to spin something off the back of it.
No, it's yours.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. You're not a fan of one of the world's most popular holiday destinations, are you?
What is it?
Paris.
Paris. Paris is a great shout. I actually think that you've pretty much hit it there. I actually think Paris is a dive in nearly every sense of the word possible.
You had a rough experience, though, didn't you?
I did have a rough experience, but
how
I've been
long
back
did
since.
You spend in the city?
I've now well, the first time, I'll be honest. The first time, I'll be honest, I went for 24 hours. Not even that. I went for 15 hours.
Can I just say as well?
Had the worst time of my
life.
He
went for less than a day. Mm. And because this was you hadn't been at the company that long.
No, I hadn't been there. I hadn't been at Diagonal View that long.
And he was so openly vocal. Like for the next 2 days he's in the office.
Yeah.
No one's even asking him. He's just sitting there shouting about how
So my first experience of going to Paris, I went with my girlfriend who was studying fashion. At the same university as me, and she went out there to conduct some interviews, do some research, very diligent university student work. And we got there. We didn't get a hotel or anything like that. We were getting there. I think we left our house at 3 a.m. We got there at 6 and we left at like 8. Mm. You got to imagine.
You
we were there.
You were in and out. Yeah.
In and out. And from start to finish, it was a mess. We got there. The airport was horrible. We flew. I don't know why we didn't get the Eurostar, but we flew. Everybody was rude in the security. Everybody was rude at the passports. We get outside. The streets were absolutely filthy. And when I say filthy, I don't mean like London, bits of rubbish. Rubbish bags strewn everywhere, broken, ripped apart. Got onto the metro. There's a bloke pissing in the middle of the metro as it's moving. At the first stop, there's a bloke trousers down, pooing. And I was like, where the have we come here? What on earth has Paris become? And we didn't have Chloe's interviews and stuff till later. So we were like, we're going to hit the top tourist destinations, which was probably my first mistake. Don't go to like the Eiffel Tower and the Champs-Élysées and all that kind of things, early doors. Because we went, I remember going up this hill to like a spot in Paris where you can see the whole city, just getting inundated with tourists, like people banging into you, rude locals who just look at you like they want to spit on you, quite frankly. Then we
this is all just Joe's opinion of it, like this sounds like a really horrible tourist.
But this was my experience of Paris. And then we went to the first place, and there was a lot of it felt to me like it was a really aggressive city. Mm-hmm. Like there wasn't any, maybe it's because London's very polite, but the people at security had been aggressive. The metro felt quite intimidating. I was intimidated by the people at the stops, by the people pissing on there, by the people coming up and banging a drum in your face to try and get
you to give
anything money.
To make you feel settled yet?
No. So then we get to tourist attraction number one, and again, I'm getting intimidated. There are people that there are like salesmen, local salesmen, that are very aggressive in coming up and grabbing you. I remember one grabbed Chloe's wrist and started tying things around her, and I was like, leave her alone, stop doing that. Then suddenly four blokes was immediately around me, like pulling me away, and I was like in an uncomfortable situation straight away. Then they started trying to wrap things around my wrist, and they were like, 10 euros, give me 10 euros now. And I was like, not in a great headspace. This is like 11 a.m. Mm. This is in the 4 hour space I've been there, this has happened. So already I'm in a bad place in Paris. I then go to a local bakery, which Paris is supposed to be renowned for as the greatest. Oh, the bakeries are fantastic. They are not. I don't know what bakery I went to, but the croissant tasted like utter. It was awful. Couldn't stomach it. So I've now had the full experience of Paris so far. I've had people coming up to me, pushing me. I've had men pooing, men weeing, awful croissants, rudeness everywhere I've been.
Croissants are terrible. That's the third point.
Then we went to like a fashion museum in obviously a not particularly nice district in Paris where everybody was very rude, swearing at people. One bloke trying to break into a car. I was just kind of in a space where I was like, this is awful. Went to the Eiffel Tower. I've never been to a worse tourist destination. It was incredibly packed. Every 10 steps, a bloke came up to me and tried to forcefully sell me a key ring. Couldn't stand it. even when you went to take photos, you couldn't take photos because people were knocking into you or getting in the way. Or, you know, if you stand 10 foot away from your girlfriend and try and take a photo of her, it's polite common courtesy, if you see that happening, not to just walk through the middle of the shot. You couldn't do it. It would be every 4 seconds a person walked through. It's a disaster. So this is, I'm now about 10 hours into my trip. It's been nothing but negativity. Then it was just the police officers. There was, everybody had guns, like full armed gun units. And I was just like, this is just horrible. Got to the airport. Taxi took us the wrong way. Overcharged me by about 50 euros. Got to the airport, went home. Worst trip ever. Recently went back again for a Snapchat summit. Again, didn't think anything of the city. It was just dirty. The people were rude. Just had a horrible time both times I've been to
it's
Paris.
It's weird.
So my unpopular opinion is that Paris is a...
I've been to Paris and it was...
I have as well.
It was nice. I went there, did a charity bike ride couple of years ago. I didn't actually make it. I broke my arm, fell off the bike 2 hours in and broke my arm. But they were supposed to end up in Paris, so I went over on the train and met them, and it was nice. But I know parts of what you mean. Like, it wasn't a city that made me feel like, oh, like, so I went to Berlin last week. Now that's a city where when I'm walking around, I was thinking, okay, I need to get back out here when it's not for work.
Yeah,
like, quality city. I didn't get that feeling from Paris, so I know what you mean. And the only other thing I would say that I agreed with you on is, not so much in terms of the crowds. When I was at the Eiffel Tower, it was actually quite empty. But as a landmark,
God,
it literally just looked like a huge piece of scaffolding.
Yeah. The Eiffel Tower, yeah. I've been up to the
top. What did you think of Paris?
I mean, it's different for me. I went when I was a lot younger than the period. I went when I was about 13, 14. And I didn't think it was that bad. We went and did everything. We went and saw Versailles. Went to the Louvre, all of that, and it was just like, cool. I was just like, whatever, but it wasn't a thing where...
I had lovely food there.
But... Yeah, yeah, food was cool. Again, I think it was just a different... Everyone's going to have different experiences.
Yeah, one of the things that made it really bad for me was trying to pack everything into 12 hours. Not a good idea. And I think it was on a weekend I went as well, so classic tourist era. It's just, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. So take it with a pinch of salt.
The thing is, I can almost guarantee that somebody else somewhere is saying the same thing about London.
100%.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely.
Because even me on a day-to-day basis get pissed off with the city, no matter how much I love it. Like, it's just difficult, isn't it, being in London when you're commuting or whatever you're doing, you're always in someone's way or somebody's always in your way.
The one thing I will say, I've never seen a dirtier city.
Than London?
Than Paris. Yeah. Than Paris.
Really?
Yeah, man.
But I think
you need to go some places in America, bro. There's some terrible...
I haven't been to America.
So this is the thing. So, like, some places have really differing views for people. Like, so when I was in America, before I went, San Francisco was, like, one of the top places on the list. I, like, can't wait to get there.
But isn't that meant to be the homeless capital of the world?
I've never seen a stronger ratio of poverty than I saw in San... Like, walking down the street... Every third guy, this is only my experience, but every third person I saw needed help. And it was just like, you're walking, you're thinking, there's what's going on here? Because you see
Tyson Fury did an interview last week and he was like, somebody needs to sort this out. This is a mess here.
They said that the gaming boys went over there for like a gaming conference or something. Was it E3? I think they might have been
E3. Yeah, that was LA. So that was California, still, but further down.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, again, there's obviously
crazy.
An issue, isn't there?
Yeah.
Next question, because Jono asked this. Just first of all, let's just do a quick, how are we time-wise? 10 minutes, Max. Okay, so we've got another couple
10
of
minutes.
Questions.
Okay, let's fly for a couple.
Your better half came up in part of your last story. Jono here has asked, how did you and Chloe meet? I've actually never asked you this. I'm intrigued to know how you actually made a move.
So me and Chloe met at university. We lived together first year.
In halls?
In halls, yeah. So in England you have halls. They're kind of like blocks of flats, but it's kind of the done thing that you hang out with your floor or your section. You don't really hang out with everybody in there.
So was she in your flat?
She was in my floor, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So not living that is that's less living with each other than it first of all sounds, isn't it?
Yeah, so she lives
she's in a flat down the hall from
me. She lives down the hall from me, yeah. So that's how I got to know her. Then second year, all of our friends, so kind of I think 8 of us, moved into one house, and Chloe was one of the people that was in there with me.
How have we never spoke about this before? She's literally a mirror.
Yeah, so yeah. I obviously moved into another house in Southampton. She was one of the other people in there. Then just on a night out, and it's just like classic behaviour.
So went in the second year.
Yeah, just
were you already friends?
We were already friends from the first year. We'd been on a lot of nights out and stuff. But
I'm gonna say yes.
I can't really remember. I can't really remember. I remember making the move on it. I remember always thinking she was extremely attractive.
Yeah.
And then
what was the tipping point? Where was that? I should probably do something about this.
this is good stuff.
I think the tipping point was. You know, in a shared house, it often gets to a thing where, because you have a shared lounge, at like midnight, everybody's there, and then one person stays with you. Or you just stay and watch TV. Mm. I remember being at like 15, 20 consecutive nights where it was just me and Chloe up watching TV and like having like really in-depth chats or like chats and bitching about people and stuff like that. For maybe like a month straight every night. Yeah. And then we would go out on the night out and then like get together and then come back and then just talk for ages and stuff. I remember that was like happening all the time. That was pretty much how I met her at Southampton.
Well, you made the move or she made the move?
Yeah, it was definitely me. There's no way she was making the move on me. Have you seen the state of me? I was like, I had a 4 all over back then. Honestly, I remember going once to a... I was saying this story the other day to someone. I went to a Chinese barber in Asda in Southampton once. And how about this? The guy only
Asda's a massive... For anyone that's not from the UK, Asda is like a...
It's a supermarket brand.
It's a Walmart or one of them in America.
Yeah. I remember asking the guy, can I have like a 2 on the sides and then... scissor cut on the top, and he didn't have a shirt, he didn't have a rate, he didn't have an electric thing.
No,
and
clippers.
How about this? He only used thinning scissors
the whole way,
the whole
so the ones that just dust in a way,
the ones that like take one in every 10 hairs.
Yeah, yeah.
So he only used thinning scissors on the top of my head. And I remember getting back and being like, Chloe, this guy has my life. And Chloe cutting them with, do you remember those like schoolboy scissors, the ones that are like red and blue
and green, like, and yellow,
yeah, because we didn't have any proper ones at uni.
Purple and yellow or green and yellow was for left-handed people.
And she cut my hair with that, and so there's no way that Chloe looking like Chloe does and me looking like that she made the move on me. Absolutely 0% chance.
Fair play.
Right, I'm trying to find where we've got the next. Oh, okay. So Finley's asking, a nice quick one because of work. So how long have you worked at FD?
So Football Daily, as I'm sure a lot of people know that watch regularly, is owned by a company called Diagonal View. I started working here in 2013 as a website guy. I came in basically to write stories for a website that didn't exist. And then did pretty well on that before we realised it didn't make any money.
You were still at uni, weren't you?
Yeah, so I was still at university, so I was commuting from Southampton to London whilst at university. So I'd go and do lectures, and then I'd come like 2 days a week up to London, which is like an hour and a half, 2 hours away.
Yeah.
Something like that, and then write for the website, and then work back in Southampton, do my degree, come back up here, do 2 hours, write for the website, help the Facebook, help the Twitter and stuff, do a bit on YouTube, but mainly the website.
It was Dave that gave you a job, wasn't it?
Corporate Dave gave me the job. So thanks very much for that, Dave.
Big CD.
Yeah, he did. He gave me the job and then did okay on the website. And then it kind of wasn't making any money. And obviously his business is all about making money. So moved on to the YouTube. The previous producer who was on Football Daily, you guys might remember him, Patrick McKeamy. Patrick McKeamy, I think he moved to Adult Swim and stuff. Yeah. He left. And then I took over Football Daily with a guy called Danny Timms. Who is now working for Whistle.
Works for the Whistle, yeah.
And then Van Straten joined me, and...
Was Van Straten before Hamill?
Yeah, yeah. Van Straten and me are the only people that have been here 5 years.
Yeah. Because it's weird, you...
You've been here five years?
Sorry, 2015. 3 years. We've been here 3 years. Me and Van Straten are the only people that have been here since 2015.
Right.
So... We were there, obviously took the ship forward. Hamill joined as well. We created EFD, created the Football Daily Facebook, got that up to like 4 million likes, the YouTube up to over a million subscribers, the Instagram up to 250K. I think now we've hired 11 more people.
Mad.
Yeah.
So we're up to like a team of 14. And it's going pretty well. It's going pretty well. Obviously, I do other stuff outside of Football Daily now as well. Do some stuff for Sky, do some stuff for BBC. But it's going pretty well for a channel that's just talks about football.
Yeah, I always... I said this before. But
without any football rights.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think is that's the biggest success story. I think,
yeah, because people always like, oh, can you put the goals on screen? Can you put the goals on screen? No, because we haven't paid £1 billion for the Sky rights, you idiots.
But you joined sort of maybe a month before I left.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we worked with each other for like a month. But I remember the first time I ever met him. And it was, we'd gone to the pub for a drink. It was Boltwood's last week. Adam Boltwood, who used to work on Football Daily, brought way back in the day. And you were the new kid that had come in that was working on the website.
Yeah,
and I'd handed in my notice because I was going to be leaving soon. So I was off for a bit and then I came back. Mm. And in the first month, so when I left the company, you was just like, this kid who's working on the stuff, but he was loud. Mm. He was very in your face.
Very in your face.
Sam's just done a massive yawn because he looks like he's crying.
I didn't yawn.
Oh, right. Well, you look like your eyes are watering.
I am very in your face there. If you ever met me, I think you'd realise.
So the first time I met Joe, I thought he was racist.
Yeah.
Hey?
I also hated him.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was the most abrasive person.
A lot of people say that, though. I am very abrasive.
I can't stress to you enough. The first week in this company I had was a Halloween meme. No. Netflix and Kill which was the
party,
theme.
And the theme was Netflix and Kill. So you had to come as anyone from a Netflix show, but a dead version of them.
And he just kept coming up to me with this, I can't remember what drink it was.
Tequila.
Was it tequila?
It was a bottle of Sambuca, and I was drinking it straight out of the bowl.
And he kept coming up to me with the cap. And pouring it in the cap and just making me drink it. I've never met you before. You're dressed like Karate Kid. I don't really get away from you.
I know exactly the one you mean. Away from me. Because I remember the following year, actually. I think it was Christmas. It might have been that Christmas that we did shot uploads.
No, so that was Halloween.
Was it? I thought that was Christmas.
It was Christmas. It was Christmas because...
No, it was Halloween because it was when I was driving up to Scotland.
Yes, it was
that day.
So then the next Halloween after I did that, we did shot uploads. So we did 16 shots.
Just to explain, so what the boys were doing was they stupid idea. They decided they would do to celebrate Halloween. They would do a shot for every upload they got up. And this is on a Friday.
For some reason, we did. I don't know why we did so many. Maybe we included Facebook. We did 16 shots of tequila in 4 hours.
But yeah, so because it was on a Friday, which meant you were talking a weekend's worth.
But
of
then
uploads.
We were
so
also
a lot of content.
We were also drinking. We also probably drank 2 or 3 crates of beer, and we were drinking vodka at the same time.
Because the office was just having a drink. Weren't they?
But everybody was not happy with Football Daily. I remember vividly everybody being like, Football Daily, like, they've taken it too far this time. Like, we was all being sick everywhere. People were smoking inside. It was like people chucking glass bottles across the room.
Yeah, they weren't great. I was driving up to Glasgow, and my brother had my phone because I was driving because you'd FaceTime me.
Oh God!
And you was just showing me the scenes of what was going on around, and it just looked like chaos.
I remember walking upstairs. Jalab was in a bag where we had to carry Jalab upstairs and put him onto the CEO's sofa, and he was vomiting all over himself uncontrollably. And we put him in the recovery position. He passed out.
None of this condoned. Just
no, none of this condoned. Obviously, none of this condoned. And then I remember coming back downstairs and seeing the scenes of like James Wayne passed out, shirtless.
Yeah,
just sick all over himself. Michael McCubbin punching ceiling tiles out of the roof with cigarettes in his hand. It was just like
it was a mess.
Yeah, it was carnage. And I think everybody was pretty pissed off with us. Yeah. But that was like our like Halloween tends to be a bit of a blowout football day.
Having said that,
Christmas.
Though, since the first time I met him, absolutely love this guy. Yeah. He's one of the most wicked blokes I've met.
I think
I am a bit of a grower. I'm definitely not a shower. Trust me.
This is the thing. So when I came back, you were more established in the company at that point.
Yeah.
And so I think from that point on, we started to work together on a lot more things.
Yeah.
And then it was like, because I remember having conversations with Milad and being like, no, he's all right. Just get to know him. He's all right.
Yeah,
just
you have got to get time. To know me. I think for the first month, pretty much everybody hates me. And then people either get to know me or
they don't
despise me.
Yeah, he is quality. We'll both vouch for now. Joe is an absolute
when you get on my level, it's pretty fun.
I've told Chris Hamill in the past that I would knock him out because I was not protecting him. But like they were, they're going to that story quickly. He was playing football and he put a dirty challenge in on Hamill. Like it wasn't a great challenge. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think it was late into the cage or something like that.
Yeah. And Hamill, straight away, you could see in his face, he was livid. Absolutely livid. So I'm the next on the ball. So whoever's next on the ball is going to get it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I want it because...
You know it's coming.
You know what I'm saying? And he went in a bit strong and I was like, that's it now. So he went in and I've got the better of him. He's knocked me on the chin with his fist. Not on purpose, but he swung like that. Knocked me and I was like, I was already angry because he's already gone at my boy. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, I'm not going to say exactly what I said, but it was basically, I'm going to knock you out. Like, but yeah, anyway.
But it's good. It's all good fun. It's all good fun.
Yeah. Shout out Chris. Chris is my boy as well.
We're given the signal that we've pretty much used our time. So we will wrap up there. I just thought a nice question coming off the back of that to end on.
Yeah.
Would be on a quick note. We've talked about everything up to now. Mm-hmm. Give us a hint as to what would you want to work? What's like something a video you'd want to do or something you'd want to achieve going forward?
I think my 2019 aspiration will be to be regularly on television. That'll be my 2019 aspiration, I think, yeah.
In what kind of capacity?
As either a presenter or a pundit.
Okay.
Nice. Some form of being, even if it's a 2-minute slot, some form of regular face on television action.
Boom.
I like that. That'll be my 2019 aspiration. I think we'd both agree that's probably a lot more achievable than you're probably even thinking.
Fingers crossed. That would be my 2019 aspiration. Yeah. I've done radio this year. I'm still cracking through digital. I'd like to do TV next year. And in 2020 film, baby, you'll see me in Hollywood.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, I want to become David Dobrik.
I do, actually. Yeah, Dobrik, if you're watching or you ever see me, please get me involved.
David Dobrik, if you're watching. It's an hour-long video and we're doing the outro. As if he's here at this point.
You never know, mate. You never know who's watching.
So there we have it. That was Get to Know Joe. Apologies if we couldn't get through your questions. We tried to hit as many as we could, but we got some in-depth answers, so I think it was definitely worth it.
Yeah,
didn't say at the start, which is my fault, because I was stepping in for the big man Joe presenting today. But rate us 5 stars on all the podcast apps. Didn't do all of that. And even though it would have been weird for you to do the intro...
Can I do the outro?
You can do your outro because you've been building it up, haven't you? So,
yeah, thanks for listening with your ears and watching with your eyes. There goodbye.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.